you know, Colin, I think it's probably been a pretty, like, if you had to ask people across the board what might be some benefits of having an effective, well-implemented wellness program, I think the satisfaction piece probably would have been there. I think the engagement portion would have probably been there. I think one of your findings that most closely connects the dots with the business side of things are some of a couple of the other sections within the white paper. And I think mainly it's the influence on occupancy rates, and it's the elevating of the competitive positioning along with the powering of marketing efforts. I think those three, while different sections within the white paper, are probably very closely related. And for those that aren't, you know, still need further convincing or want as much validation as possible for why a wellness program makes sense or why a specific type of wellness program makes sense, that has to be just some of the most enticing components of your white paper. So can you spend a little bit of time really diving into that? What is it about your findings that make the wellness program so closely related to occupancy rates being improved over time? From a brand perspective, how are communities using wellness to, again, elevate that competitive positioning? And ultimately, what is it about these sales and marketing teams? What are they doing to really effectively message what it is that wellness means?
So let's work from the back. And that is, I think that there's a gap in the use of data such as this from the sales and marketing teams. You know, a lot of sales and marketing are used to selling things. So things such as bricks and mortar. We have a beautiful community. You know, we have a good quality of life, but what does that really mean? You know, so I would, you know, from a sales and marketing standpoint, I'm always one that believes, you know, that you want to try and create a compelling story, and that if you can use data to solidify that compelling story, do so. You know, these three elements that you mentioned are key in all of that. And that is, you know, people have asked us, well, why don't you have all of the other data out there? You know, if people improve their blood pressure, if people improve their, you know, their diabetes, you know, there's so much of that kind of science out there. I feel that would just be repetitive. Now, there's a lot of data being collected within communities today that will show that anyway, but there's not a lot of data being collected that will actually talk about what the CEO and the CFO, and I keep coming back to those two individuals because they write the check, and or the advisory board or the resident board needs, and what they need to see is that it's actually having a positive influence on the bottom line, which, by the way, managing all those other health issues has a positive influence as well. But it's much easier to be able to say to someone that if you have an attrition rate of 10%, and let's say you have a community of 100 people, so that's 10 people, and each of those residents are paying you $4,000 a month, so that's $40,000 for every month that a community or an apartment is not filled. And now you can actually show how you can impact that by 2.7 years, which is now you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And over 10 years, you're talking about millions of dollars. There's a very serious conversation to be had in regards to that. And that is something that people are looking for. It's quick. It's as you said at the very start of this, it's the nuggets that grab people's attention. And these are the nuggets that grab people's attention when it comes to the bottom line. Are residents staying in the community longer, and are they healthier, and is it impacting our bottom line? By doing so, we are not going to have to spend as much money on refurbishing the apartments if it's an apartment complex. We're not going to have to spend the money on going out and marketing to potential residents like we have. We're not going to have to spend the money on, care, the level of care, because people are healthier. All of these things just start having an accumulative effect that when you put them all together is very, very significant. But at the end of the day, Tony, it all comes back to a very simple equation. Happy residents, healthy residents are good for business.
Well, and again, you've done a nice job of balancing sort of that bottom line, simplified version of things, but with the right data. You go on to sort of indicate nearly half of life plan residents, that they either strongly agree or agree that the wellness program is a primary reason they chose the community. And again, nearly half of those IL or IL-AL residents, again, strongly agree or agree that the wellness program is why they chose the community. You sort of can't escape those numbers. If you're trying to, you can't get more bottom line than that to be able to bring to the table, people are choosing us because of our wellness program. And what I know is interesting about how that survey is constructed, you're defining wellness for that respondent, again, as that holistic, multidimensional approach and framework. So again, I think the validation of that through the numbers really speaks for itself.
Well, what we have is a continuum, and that is a continuum before somebody even walks through your door. And that is that it starts, that it positions your community in a different light. It positions your community from a perspective of that I'm going to come in here and I'm going to continue my life, where one of the challenges that communities have had over the years, and in my mind, wrongly so because of mass media, but maybe rightly so because many years ago, and that is that it may be my last stop. So you are changing that right off the bat with how you position the community. Mm-hmm. Then people are now coming in because of that. Now people are actually getting delivered what you are promising them, and through your mission, because you have a culture of wellness. And by doing so, they are remaining healthier. And by remaining healthier and having a better quality of life, they're staying in the community longer. They're reducing the cost on the community to service them, because the cost of wellness services compared to care services and the cost of staffing in that area are a little bit different as well. And because they're happy, because they're getting results, because they're staying longer, they're also talking about what they're doing at your community to others, which is now coming full circle all the way back to the start, where more people are now coming in because of your wellness program. So it's this continuum from before people even get into your community all the way through to when the resident starts that circle all over again.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Colin, in your opinion, to what degree do you either envision or possibly see the need, you think about asking the resident themselves as far as, what influenced their decision, and you consider other decision-making individuals that are part of that process, the adult child influencer, et cetera. And you think about how even that evolves across levels of care and how someone like that might be involved in an assisted living memory care decision environment, and even in a health center, skilled nursing facility environment, where, certainly communities having wellness as a part of those living experiences are very important. And so you think about creating differentiation in some of those higher levels of care through wellness, and the idea of other stakeholders saying, I chose this community, as an AL memory care environment, or I chose along with my loved one, this skilled nursing facility to do some short-term rehab in part because of the wellness program. What would be your thoughts on that? Is that a direction that you would possibly head into?
Oh, absolutely. You know, can you imagine, you know, getting the reputation of being somewhere that someone comes in and that they are able to completely regain, not completely, that they can make strides towards improving their quality of life, where in essence they're thinking that they're actually going the other way, that they can actually say that moving into the assisted living community actually started them on a path back towards independence, as opposed to a path towards you know, long-term care. And I saw that firsthand with my father. And there are many parents out there who are experiencing this. Or many children who are experiencing it with their parents, and that was my father chose not to do anything, and he went down the continuum. He could have easily chosen to do something and gone up the continuum of function. And your function is so crucial in regards to your ability to engage in many areas of wellness. And we're talking about function being physical, cognitive, and social. So, you know, I think that assisted living has a terrific opportunity to be transformative for people's lives if it chooses it so, as opposed to, not as opposed to, it just simply has an opportunity to be transformative in an unexpected way. And can you imagine what that would do to a brand, what that would do to an organization's reputation of people coming in and actually expecting to move towards independence? Not that they don't, but that that's what's expected.
You know, arguably, another category to sort of add to the great list that you already have going on here. When you think of, again, making the business case for wellness, to what degree, Colin, do you feel like the referral, more of that professional referral, back to a community again, and it could be across any of the levels of care, but whether it's from a healthcare provider, from a hospital setting, from a physician's setting as an example, you think of them valuing the wellness program enough or that wellness experience enough, and whether it's post rehab or not, you think of them just understanding why that partnership makes sense and how it's going to be of business benefit to them. To what degree do you see some viability there and further making the case for wellness as it relates to obtaining people from some of these healthcare referral sources?
Well, I think that the healthcare referral sources are sending people to you, whether it is, you know, my doctor, or whether it is through the hospital with post-acute care or what have you. They're sending people to you with hopefully an expectation of that, number one, they can become part of a community so that, you know, in some instances it eliminates or reduces social isolation. But they're sending people to you for an end result, and that is improvement. The improvement could be small, it could be big, but you know, there are very few people who are referring people to someone else that are not hoping for some kind of improvement. So if I'm sending someone, I'm a doctor, and I'm sending someone to you because I feel that they have lost their functional abilities or are losing it, and that they need the assistance of an assisted living community, I'm also probably, you know, referring them to you to see what you can do to restore that, or to at least improve that, or to manage the decline. So I think that as more and more of the world, and literally the world, looks at how to age well through the medical lens, through the preventive lens, through the wellness lens, through all of these different lenses, there's going to be a coming together of all of those, which there is right now in various areas, and that the expectation is going to be that I'm not sending someone to you just for care. I'm sending someone for you know, a positive outcome, and now it's up to you to help fulfill that. And in what way will you do that? through proper nutrition. You know, so many people are malnourished and they don't even know it. You know, as a part of a malnutrition think tank the other day, and one of the challenges they face is the term itself, like wellness, malnourished is used in many different ways, but you don't think about an obese person being malnourished, mm-hmm. but they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from, you know, helping people to manage their nutrition, that then helps give them some of the energy that they need to do some of the things that would help restore them back to some level of function that they can now become more engaged. And if they're more engaged, it's all a ripple effect, Tony, and no need to tell you or the people on this call. And that is that, you know, we're looking for ripples that will get people to become more engaged in all these different things on the upside as opposed to the downside.
That makes total sense. And we're of the belief that if we can demonstrate, because for a lot of these healthcare referral sources and a lot of these hospitals in particular, you know, they're going to care a lot about certainly what's right for the patient and for the resident, but they're going to care about their bottom line too, and making sure that folks don't get readmitted and that they don't get tagged or dinged for not performing well from a readmissions perspective. And even skilled nursing facilities sooner than later will also start getting penalized for some readmissions. And so you think of communities, senior living organizations leveraging their wellness programs in particular to make a case for how those that are involved in the wellness program do not get readmitted by them making that case. Does that influence the referral pathways of some of these, again, hospitals and other healthcare referral sources that to some of what you're indicating already is influencing occupancy rates, is creating a competitive differentiator, et cetera. So I think that's part of the angle, at least that LifeCare Services is coming at it from, and I imagine others as well.
Oh, it is, you know, absolutely at the forefront of conversation. And that is, you know, the accountable care organizations are, you know, having a significant impact on the industry and what happens. And I think wellness has a very significant role to play in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can keep someone out of a hospital and the readmittance rates go down, it's financially beneficial for all who participate.
Earlier, Colin, we talked a little bit about, again, the one of the many ways that communities could really add to that viability of their wellness program, the credibility that backs it up as well, is by having, again, some formal education and certifying in the domain of leadership and wellness management in particular. So you gave our listeners a little bit of information on that. Was there anything else that you wanted to add as far as that leadership and wellness management certificate was concerned?
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, I've been monitoring the comments that have been coming out of the course, and, you know, we've been hearing things like, you know, I've been in the industry for 25 years and I wish I had had this information when I first came out, or things like, you know, I'm so busy focusing on what I do that I haven't taken the time to learn how to plan and things like that. So it's really exciting. And, you know, we focus on just simply 10 modules. And that is, you know, we start with strengthening the wellness culture, which is what we've talked extensively about today, you know, but then how to communicate with your resident staff and vendors, family members, and how to do that effectively, you know, then also leading and managing. You know, a lot of people who've moved into leadership position weren't actually trained for that. They've moved up the ladder, but they haven't had that formal training. And then we dive into things like collecting data and how to build your business case, which we've just talked about, but how to build a business case for your specific organization itself and your specific location, because your location is different than one in New York if you're in Arizona. And then looking at the other modules are looking at really creating and managing high performance teams, evaluating performance, enhancing marketing and advocacy skills, which is really about storytelling and catalyzing change. And lastly, but certainly not least, is how is technology impacting all of this? So when you look at actually the topic areas that we're covering, a lot of folks have not gone through many of these different areas individually. Matter of fact, our communicating effectively module, which is probably the most extensive module in the whole course, we have had such amazing feedback on it. And it's because, most people have learned a couple of the ways to communicate with people, but not all the different many ways that are available that, now it gives them a better perspective. So I think it's all about education. And the more I understand, what my role is and how to, work with my resident and how to work with my fellow team members, the better equipped I'm going to be successful.
You know, for those listeners out there, Colin, that do want a little bit more information on the certification course and some more details, is it just your general website that they could go to?
Yeah, if they go to our website and it's on the homepage, the ICAA Leadership and Wellness Management Certificate, and just click on that. It gives you an in-depth overview. It will also have a frequently asked questions section, and also it outlines the CEUs that we provide as well. Right now, we're working with six different agencies, and we're looking at adding in ones for the nurses as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Colin, I certainly appreciate your time in going through the white paper. We could probably talk and talk for hours and hours on end. And so we're just kind of scratching the surface here, but purpose being to just share with some of those wellness professionals, certainly within our organization and beyond, that that really care a lot about this area. And I would say making the case for wellness from a business standpoint is just so high on everyone's priority list that it just merits this type of conversation. So any closing comments or parting words on your behalf?
I think that, as we said at the very start, Tony, and that is that wellness has changed significantly over the 35 years that I've been in it. And even more so over the last 5 years, it has gone from, as you said, something that, was fluffy for some to more structured. And what it is now is it's an opportunity. And the simple question is, what do you do with that opportunity? So hopefully the report and the certificate course and things like the ICAA conference and our relationship with you and your team can help each and every one of the participants move forward with their own professional development, be more effective, and get greater joy out of their job each and every day. And to me, that's what it's all about, is when you can wake up cranked up about what you do, which we all should, it's a good day.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So, well, Colin, thanks again for your time, and thanks for joining us on our LCS podcast, and we look forward to future conversations.
I appreciate it, Tony, and all the best.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services, LLC, is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.